Welcome to episode 32. I'm Stuart McCullough, I'm the CEO of VHAA. And starting with this week's industrial roundup, in particular with community health, as it continues its year of intense bargaining, we have regular dates scheduled with regards to the number 4 branch of the Health Services Union for bargaining. That's the branch that covers pharmacists, psychologists, and dietitians. We also have regular meetings scheduled with the Health Workers Union, but they have been infected by some of the other activities HW are undertaking in terms of protected action with respect to Dorovitch, but we anticipate that regular meetings will resume shortly. With respect to VABA, members might recall that they had not attended the proposed meetings that we had sent to them. Instead, that matter went to the Fair Work Commission as VABA made an application for a majority support determination. A full summary of those proceedings is available on the VHA community app. Suffice to say, there is now a schedule of meetings for the coming months, and they will also be overseen by Commissioner Cribb. We are very pleased that that matter is now back on track. With respect to our health service members, doctors in particular, there are 2 daily meetings per week on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Tuesdays for doctors in training and Thursdays for specialists. With regards to doctors in training, one of the key issues that we're seeking to resolve concerns interruptions to service, such as from parental leave and the interaction with fixed term contracts. This is a problem that is unique to this particular group, for which the current agreement does not offer a solution. So we will be working hard to ensure that people who do take parental leave don't suffer any disadvantage. In addition, we do have meetings this week with respect to the general dentists and specialist dentists agreements, as well as for the dental therapists, dental hygienists and oral health therapists. There is a meeting also of the general dentists reference group this week. And with respect to the health and allied agreement, and in particular the SDPPWG, that group has met again this week to progress that matter. We are seeking to work quite closely with the HWU and with the department with regards to the upcoming translation of clerical workers into the managers and administrative structure. Members can expect a detailed bulletin summarising that translation in the coming days in preparation for that coming into effect on the 1st of October. We also have our rural and regional forums coming up in the next couple of weeks, for which an agenda has now been released. But just as a reminder, on the 5th of September we'll be in Ararat, on the 7th of September in Mansfield, the 11th of September in Wonthaggi, the 14th of September in Colac, and the 26th of September in Swan Hill. With respect to all those bargaining meetings, they are currently being summarised as they occur through the VHA community app. And that's it for this week's Industrial Roundup. Welcome to the weekly update, where we go in depth with a particular subject. Joining me for this week's discussion, returning from suspension and fresh from being certified as being fully compliant with Section 44 of the Australian Constitution, is the Workplace Relations Manager, Tim Nagle. Welcome, Tim.
Thanks, George. It's good to be here again.
So for the benefit of those people who are listening, it might be worth mentioning the fact that they might hear a little bit of wind outside. It is a particularly windy day here. We are broadcasting directly from our Antarctic office.
That's true.
So welcome back, Tim. You know how it works by now. Could you reveal the clue to this week's discussion? So for the benefit of those people who are listening to this rather than watching, not that there are people watching who aren't listening, would you be kind enough to display the object and then describe it?
It is a CD by the Shags called Philosophy of the World.
I don't know if you're familiar with this album, Tim, but there's a great story behind it. This is possibly one of the worst albums ever made. It's 3 sisters, the Wiggins sisters, who were forced by their father to form a band, and they were rushed into the studio before they could A, write a song, and B, play their instruments. But it's not afraid to ask the really big questions, such as, why do I feel, what are parents, and what should I do? And the fact that it's willing to tackle those big questions leads us to today's subject. One of the biggest questions, of course, in the mental health space, and particularly in the community health setting, is how much time to divide between clinical work and preparation work. And that leads us to today's subjects, the community management workload system.
Yes, course.
So Tim, just take us through the fact of the mental health agreement and when it was approved and operating from.
Yeah, so the agreement was approved by the Commission in April, the 20th of April this year. And one of the key components of that, in terms from an implementation perspective, is the inclusion of a community workload management system clause.
So as you know, I often go onto our website and spend hours on there because that's where all the agreements are kept. And also on the website, there are the implementation guides. And I was reading through the mental health implementation guide, and it does refer to this system. So just in terms of what that obligation is, that is, what is CWMS?
So CWMS is the acronym for the Clinical Workload, Community Workload Management System. And really that's about how community workloads are managed, and particularly allocated to clinicians.
So this is solely specific to community clinicians only?
That's right.
Particular designations or anyone in that kind of team?
No, anyone in those teams that are doing that community work, case management. Because really one of the issues that were raised during the bargaining process is due to some of the clinical demands on those clinicians, that they weren't receiving some of that non-clinical or spending that time on the non-clinical issues, which, you know, in short term is okay, but not sustainable in the long term.
So it's probably an iteration of the age-old dilemma where clinical requirements end up usurping organisational requirements or organisational time. Is it a new concept? Is it something that's been invented by the latest agreement, or has that concept of that division and that kind of system been around for a while?
No, it has been around for a while. So there was a clause in the previous agreement that dealt with this, that basically said that organisations should have a community workload management system, and it wasn't very prescriptive about how that was done. So a lot of organisations have sort of wrestled with it. Some have put into place great systems, and others have really struggled with some of the sort of the nuts and bolts of how it might work. A part of that is can be tracked back to reporting arrangements and stats and how that's sort of recorded and then reported through to the department. So it was quite complex. There has been lots of discussions over the previous agreement about how it could be made easier, facilitated both with the department and also the unions as well, because I think it's in everyone's interest to have a reasonable community workload management system in place. It's just about how it looks and how it operates.
So going to the provision in the agreement, what is the obligation with respect to an employer's community workload management system under the agreement?
Yeah, so the obligation in the agreement is to have an implemented system within 12 months of the agreement being approved, and an agreed model as well that's compliant with the provisions of the agreement.
So there have been difficulties in the past, which you alluded to, with respect to implementing that kind of system. How does the agreement address that?
Well, I mean, it was really good through the negotiation process or the bargaining process. It really evolved, and it evolved through lots of discussions with the unions and also the reference groups about how to try and make it as simple as possible, because I think that's some of the systems that are operating use that as a principle. They try and make it simple. So we know that clinicians have only got a certain amount of time per week based on their contracted hours, and we know that some of that time is spent on things that are non-discretionary, things that don't change. For instance, like, I think we'll deal with that a little bit later on, but so it's about putting that to a side, and then the rest of it is clinical time. So really, at the basic level, that's how it was done, and the distinction was made between direct clinical commitments and organisational time and practitioner development time.
So really dividing into two sections,
that's
the direct clinical commitments and the second section being the organisational time. So how does an employer know what to put into each section?
So the agreement provides guidance on that, and it does more than guidance. It provides the categories that fall into each group. It's probably not an exhaustive list. We'll try to make it as exhaustive as possible, but no doubt there'll be other things that that will be outside of that.
So effectively, they need to take the tasks and divide them into those two sections, one for the organisational tasks, one for the clinical tasks. How does an employer go about figuring out what category, what section a particular task falls into?
So the agreement contemplates that and provides a list of both the direct clinical commitments and also the organisational practitioner development items. It's probably not an exhaustive list. The PAEs have tried to be as comprehensive as possible and identify which basket the most common things occur in.
I guess it couldn't be exhaustive as such. But just to be clear, for those things that don't fall within the list, doesn't mean they don't count.
No.
They still need to be assigned into a section.
That's right. The sum of the two baskets is the contracted hours of work, so they have to go into either basket. So if we look at the things in the column A, or the direct clinical commitments, there's such things as client conduct or engagement with families or carers and or nominated persons, unregistered client contacts, so people from other health services, community-centred contacts, so this is where a clinician will provide a service to a community organisation outside the health service, and that may include things like consultation services or also case conferences as well. Mm-hmm. The additional things are clinical-related administrative work, for example, reading of research papers or patient notes for any purpose, other clinical direct care duties required by the team, which is a broad category, report writing or reviewing, travel time, intra-agency liaison meetings and training, individual clinician triage and allocation, review and discharges, discipline-specific responsibilities, time for documentation requirements such as but not limited to progress notes and clinical documentation, clinical review preparations, outcome measures, reports, risk assessments, statistics, secondary caseload, and I think secondary caseload is an important point to note, that is on the clinical commitment side, community education and social activities, and finally community development activities. So,
are you sure it's not exhaustive?
I think we got pretty close, to be honest.
I'm exhausted.
That's right.
What about column B?
So column B is those organisational and practitioner development items, and they include things like handover, rostered duty time, staff team meetings, rest breaks, clinical review meetings, ADOs for full-time employees, of course, CWMS reviews, supervision of students, portfolios if applicable, and clinical supervision of staff professional development.
So the clause also contains specific CWMS principles which guide the model.
Yeah, so this is the key part, is that the employee has got so many hours to allocate to the two baskets and all their activities go into one of the two. Now, what the principles say is that up to 60% of that time should be spent on clinical commitments and up to 40% should be spent on the other. So so it's got this 60-40 split between those two baskets, with up to 60 being the clinical commitment time.
And in terms of that split, so it needs to equal 100%, I assume. You don't assign only 80% of the 100%.
No. So it will equal 100% every time.
Okay. So the up to is a little bit, I guess it could be greater than 40%.
Yeah, so you might have less clinical commitments. So you might be at 55 because you're doing some more professional development, for instance. That might be up to 45, as long as the clinical commitment time isn't greater than 60% of your time.
One of the principles that we've been working with under the new round of agreements, and it features in a couple of agreements, is that need to manage workloads in a way that the work can be conducted within the hours that are given during the ordinary hours.
That's right.
As opposed to not assuming that people will complete whatever the work is in overtime or unpaid overtime, as the case may be. Is that a feature here? Is that one of the principles?
It is. I mean, it's about sustainable service and making sure that clinicians' workloads are reasonable and can be undertaken in the time allocated.
You mentioned before secondary caseloads. Tell me more about the secondary caseloads component.
I think secondary caseloads are often the tricky part from an operational perspective for a health service. So really, so it's worth mentioning. And really what that says is that in determining how caseload management arrangements operate, regard needs to be given that they are part of one of those baskets, so they are a clinical commitment. So simply reallocating caseload, secondary caseloads to clinicians that will push them above the 60% can't be entertained under this clause. So that's the key part, is that secondary caseloads are part of the clinical commitments. And the other key point is that backfill, therefore, may be necessary where the ratios within the team exceed that 60%. Mm. So it gives you a guide, or gives health services a guide for managing secondary caseloads within that sort of those principles.
So what is the change for employers?
So the key change is that 60-40 split, so having that clinical commitment time up to 60% of the employees' contracted hours.
So what about those employers who currently have an arrangement in place where the organisational time is greater than 40%?
Yeah, so the clause specifically addresses that issue and says that the status quo remains for those people.
Is that effectively through a no disadvantage principle?
There's a no disadvantage principle, but there's also a specific clause that maintains the status quo for those people with development times above 40%. And that's because those models are working and have been working for some time.
So what should an employer do if they're experiencing some kind of difficulty in implementing the clause?
So there's, I mean, the reference group, this was a key issue during the bargaining period. Mm. We had quite a large reference group representing health services in that reference group. So they'll be very familiar with this clause and how it operates. So I think they're a good contact point within the health service. In addition to that, you know, Richard and I attended those reference groups and have had many discussions around this during the bargaining process.
So I think this would be the point during the broadcast where your phone number would flash up underneath your screen and you'd probably do this.
Call now.
That's right.
So Richard and I can assist. Also, the unions are quite committed to this clause. I mean, this was the key outcome for them. And they understand, through the discussions that I've had, they understand that it may be difficult for health services implementing this. So I would expect they would be very supportive through that local WIC process to also work through any issues that arise from this. And the other thing that we're doing is that we will establish a working group if people think it's useful to have a central group outside of the reference group that may meet more often, be quite focused on this as a key implementation issue, just to work through those issues.
So we can build up a little bit of a process to support this if that's what members need.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's really, this has been in the works for some time, hasn't quite got there. I think this provision in the agreement really simplifies it, makes it a lot easier, but it doesn't mean that people might not still have some difficulties implementing it.
So does the clause have some safeguards?
It does have some safeguards in terms of health services having difficulty implementing it. So those people who are having difficulty can notify the parties within 8 weeks of the approval. So we've obviously...
That's already behind us. Yeah.
We've passed that time, but they're...
Did anyone notify within that period?
Not that I'm aware of, but I haven't touched base with all health services, obviously. But there is an opportunity to do that. And what that triggers is a review process. So a review process with the department, the unions, us as well, just to try and identify what the barriers are, and then the requirement to implement it 12 months from after that review process. There's also some provisions that allow for the commission to play a role in overcoming any difficulties and extending that time if necessary.
So can an employer use a different model?
They can, yeah. So there are some health services with models that are working well, so they're maintained. And also, if there are issues identified through that review process and an alternative model identified that complies with the various principles, then that can also be used.
So what about outside the review process, though?
There's also capacity outside the review process. So, I mean, one of the key issues discussed during bargaining was the difficulties with a one-size-fits-all approach. Mm. There will always be some localised considerations or that need to be accommodated. So there are provisions in the agreement that allow for those, through agreement, through a process, using the local WICs, to accommodate for those unique variations at health service level.
Are there any other variations to the 60-40 clause?
There are some specific situations identified, and those are where clinicians in a community mental health team in training positions, for instance, or graduate positions or project positions, or newly appointed staff. We know that they go through an induction process. The 60-40 might not apply from day one. So there may be, because of those additional induction processes, for instance, there may need to be spent more time on organisational development activities, so which would mean that the clinical time couldn't be up to 60. It might be lower for the first period of time. The other situation specifically contemplated by the clause is that supervisor or team leaders in community health teams may have organisational and practitioner development hours different to the 40%, and they may need specific consideration depending on what their job requires.
So, Tim, what are your tips for an employer who is concerned about their split?
Look, it should be real. The beauty of the clause is not only because it's simpler, but it's also quite objective. So it should be that that the employer and the manager have a discussion, but it should be quite objective about working out what the organisational development time is and then being able to take corrective action if it's identified that they're above that or below, sorry, that organisational development time.
We referred earlier to a no disadvantage clause. And so just as a reminder, what does that clause do?
It's really it's a version of an adverse action clause, really. What it says is that if individual clinicians raise concerns about their split or their allocation, then they shouldn't be disadvantaged because of that.
They can't be penalised.
They can't be penalised, that. Yeah, that's right. So it goes without saying it doesn't really need that clause, but it's just to make sure that's clear. Because it is a new clause, it is a new process, so we want to make sure that that is front of mind for people.
But people have that engagement without fear. So what are the key messages for members who need to apply this provision?
Yeah, the key messages are that the community management workload system needs to be implemented within the 12 months, unless that review process is triggered. And it's based on that 60-40 split between direct clinical commitments and organisational and practitioner development, and that occurs at the individual clinician level. That alternatives are possible. And that assistance is also available.
Well, thank you, Tim, for that overview. That was very helpful. I feel as though we should go out with a track from Philosophy of the World by the Shags. Would you like to select one?
A song number?
I would recommend track number 4.
My Pal Footfoot?
Footfoot was their dog. Okay. It's a terrible name for a dog, but there you go. My Pal Footfoot. So thank you, Tim.
Thank you, Stuart.
And thanks to the Shags.